Welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show where we talk about visual culture and creative community. I am Michael Edwards, filling in for the host, Amanda Coulson. And in studio, we have members from Expo 2020, University of the Bahamas students, Ashley McLean, Ide Thompson, Mariah Lightborn, and Dr. Ian Bethel Bennett, who recently participated, or I should say participating, in Hot Water, the Double Dutch show at the National Art Gallery. And we've been talking about the project, this exciting project that they embarked upon during the summer, going to Ragged Island. Well, firstly, interviewing residents and descendants of Ragged Island, gathering rich information in order to inform the exhibition Hot Water. And maybe we should talk about the actual trip on the mail boat to Ragged Island.
I think we should set it up as a process of ideation, identification, and I guess extrapolation to see how this becomes a living lab.
Okay.
How we create a living lab.
All of Asians, you got to break it down.
Tell us more.
In terms of, well, this is what the show is proposing, I think, looking at how we use the materiality of Ragged Island to create more awareness, but also to open a space where you can use Ragged Island as a living lab to see how we develop. Not throwing away the old things like we like to do, but using those old things to inform the future. Mm-hmm. You know, creating much more sustainable living through building how we built before, but using different materials, because obviously the materials will have to change because time has changed. And we have new and updated material that are supposedly stronger and more resilient. And, you know, that is one of the things that we saw on Ragged Island, because some of the houses were just wiped right off their foundations.
So after a year, Hurricane Irma, so still, there is still...
I keep getting the hurricanes confused. Is it Maria? Is it Irma?
Matthew?
Is it Matthew? Yeah. Oh,
yeah. So the one, I think, that flattened Ragged Island. I think it was Irma.
It was Irma.
Okay.
Yeah.
So still, they're still recovering after almost a year now.
It's almost as if, as you will remember, it happened the day before we got there, because it was just devastated. Mm. And it really is shocking to see how much time has passed and how we're back in hurricane season and nothing has happened.
So how was the journey to Ragged Island? There's one thing to speak about Ragged Island, but I think the process of getting there is a story in and of itself. And so could we talk about that in terms of the journey to Ragged Island? Meaning, one, taking a mail boat. Why did you take a mail boat? What were the other avenues of transportation of getting there? I think it speaks to some of the sub-themes that you had mentioned earlier in terms of mobility, connectivity, and so on.
Well, as you know, the Bahamas is an archipelago of islands, so that means that we're surrounded by water on all sides, and that travel is mainly two ways, by boat or by plane.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we all know traveling there is very expensive. So getting from Nassau to Ragged Island would have been a great expense. So instead of doing that, we as a group decided to try to take a mail boat down. Now, as some people in Nassau may not know, that traveling a mail boat takes time, a long time, to get down from Nassau to the southern Bahamas.
How long does it take?
A couple of days, you know, because it's like you have to, especially when you mail boat, you have to make stops, because the mail boat's gaining money from actually dropping off and loading goods in different communities along the way down. So as we went down, we had to stop them in multiple parts of the Exuma Keys, both private and, you know, public areas. And it took us a while to get down to Ragged Island. Then we also had to go through a very rough patch of sea, the Ragged Island Passage. And so you really get to see and experience what culture was like in yesteryears when it came to seafaring and transportation and communication between the different parts of the Bahamas. So I'm coming from Nassau, never really going on a mail boat myself. That was a new experience.
That was the first time?
The first time on a mail boat.
On a mail boat.
Yeah. It was about, 4 days to get to Ragged Island?
4 days.
I can't imagine being on a boat that long.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it.
It's actually really peaceful, actually. Mm. Like, no data, no Wi-Fi.
You call that peaceful?
Yeah, very, actually. Okay. I mean, the seagull's beautiful. You know, all the colors, the seagulls.
That's crazy.
You know, the sunrises. It was amazing, you know, honestly.
So it took 4 days. So it took 4 days to get to Ragged Island. So how many keys did you touch?
Ooh,
well, how many stops did you make? How many keys? About, can you remember?
Five or six. It was Norman's Keys. Daniel Key, Black Point,
Bell Island,
High Bone Key, yeah. So, we got to see
Farmer's Key,
yeah. We passed by Buena Vista as well.
Mullet's and Ragged Island. Anywhere else?
It covers it. And we stayed night in Daniel Key, so that was another experience to see like the local Bahamian community. Juxtaposed against, you know, the tourist areas as well, you know, because we also got to go to the swimming pigs.
And the swimming pigs,
and we got to see some of the underwater caverns, the tourist spaces and the local space. So you have that like juxtaposition of spacing and why people come here and what they do when they come here, you know. So it was interesting to see all of that. You know.
Okay. That's quite a number of keys. That's about 7 or 8 keys, right?
Yeah.
Most people are not able to experience that side of the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's pretty amazing. So 3 days to get there, you're on Ragged. How long were you on Ragged? And what was that activity? So you're interviewing on Ragged. How long did you stay on Ragged Island?
Okay, well, we only had about 6 hours on Ragged Island because we had to leave the same day we got there, so... We had to rush in, you know, try to do interviews, try to experience and really get some pictures and
that
information on
that's
the space.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Perhaps we should say that if you don't leave within that 6-hour window, mm-hmm. you have to spend a week because the mail boat will come back
exactly
a week later
exactly
to pick you up. So you'd have to spend a week in very interesting circumstances.
And I'm sure you were prepared to stay for the week, right?
I mean that wasn't a problem. I brought books, so I think I'd be okay.
You can survive off of books,
okay.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They had Colic, they had Coca-Cola, they had food.
I mean,
and salt, right?
And salt.
You know, go swim, catch a fish, you know, take one tree, start a fire, catch a fish in.
Sure.
You know.
But it, you know, again, it speaks to what Ida is talking about, the real separation between spaces, but also the separation or the parallel universe that Nassau tends to live in, where it is absolutely disconnected from any of the other islands in the Bahamas and does not see them as being a part of the Bahamas except when it's convenient for the capital.
Exactly.
Or when, you know, it's time for votes during elections, then we bring them into the fold. Yeah. So that, you know, there are always tensions going on, especially about local development, which is about participatory democracy, because local government is always sidetracked or sidestepped by central government.
Mm-hmm.
And central government really does not know what is best for a space like Ragged Island because they're not there.
They
don't live on the
island. Underground, need to know the local culture and community, and that takes time and effort and, you know, intention. And sometimes central government has so much going on here that we just kind of like...
Sometimes?
Okay, all the time. So much is going on in Nassau, you know, that it's like everybody just kind of gets left to its own devices.
Marginalized.
And it's happening so much in Freeport and other places, you know.
But I think what we overlook is even within Nassau or even within New Providence, Nassau is a very small city, there is overlook.
Oh, yeah.
There are communities that are totally ignored, except when school opens and the MP goes in and throws a little bit of joy around and then leaves. And even though the school isn't finished and it probably won't be finished for a few weeks, this is what we have grown to expect in our democracy.
Exactly.
And that speaks a lot to how we picture development, because we tend to picture development without us. But we have to be agents in our own development.
Yeah, because if you think about the recent competition they had for the new central bank building, where you see the designs of the buildings and you see the people walking around the buildings, they're all not vehemence, you know, and it speaks to how, like you said again, how we see ourselves, how we see our future spaces. It's like, we're not there. But the buildings look nice, but we're not there.
So 6 hours on the ground, that's not enough time. You were able to interview some residents and kind of get a glimpse of what the reality was for them. Did they...
I find that Plastico Fantastico were able to kind of divide and conquer. So they, because there were more of them, they just managed to get out there and bam, 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 take a lot of footage and then bring it together.
And so we should say that Plastico Fantastico, a collective kind of based in the U.S., Cuba, Brazil, Bahamas, and London. So there were, you know, it's a group who are very strong visual creative practitioners in and of themselves. And so we traveled with them, or I should say you traveled with them. and so to your point, they were able to kind of divide and conquer.
Yeah,
and
I mean, Daniel was amazing with the camera, and Alex was amazing with the with her footage as well, and Maria as well.
Yeah.
But they were very quick.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they were able to extricate themselves from other parts of the process and then move out kind of unperceived and just grab information and then come back. And because so it was too short.
Right.
It was simply too
short. And so it sounds like it makes sense. If you miss the boat, you're there for the week to gather information, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. Anything else in terms of on the boat, back to New Providence, maybe capturing some other material, interviews?
Yeah.
There was a lot of activity on the boat, I was made to understand.
I mean, because
it
wasn't just us. It wasn't just our team on the boat. There were people who are from Ragged Island, who were going home, people... Mm-hmm. We had to pick up, you know, goods we had to drop off, you know, and I'm guessing a lot of kids, you know, under 15 who were on the boat, and we got to interview them as well as, you know, the captain of the boat, and we got to, you know, interview the famous Ellery Lockhart. If I didn't remember the story, he tied himself to a tree during the hurricane.
Well, I think that's Edward Lockhart.
Ellery
is... the Restoration Ragged Island Association, one of the leaders of that collective.
Yeah.
So to your point, Edward Lockhart.
Edward Lockhart.
Tied himself to a tree.
That's the funniest story during a hurricane. I mean, this man is about...
That's crazy. What,
passes 3 score and 10, right?
Yes.
About. And he's able to survive. He speaks to the resiliency of the Ragged Island people and their ties to their home, you know. So a lot of what ways he exemplifies the spirit of that space,
right?
You know, and so it was great to really get to hear him speak, give his perspective on the long history of the space, you know.
And so this was you interviewed him on the boat
on the boat because he actually came from Buena Vista as you were going in, and you know came on his boat.
Tell us about that.
In the middle of the night, kind of the story. I mean, because I think I was sleeping at the time, but I got up and I heard he's on the boat. And I'm like, but it's night. I'm like, where's this guy coming from? You know? I mean, because if it was me, I couldn't navigate on a boat in the middle of the water at night. It's like, what?
Ghost,
you know? Exactly. So
he came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I think Hemingway's Old Man and the Sea really speaks to that kind of thing because. He bases that on that fishing community in Havana, I mean in Cuba, because it's outside of Havana, and how their incredible respect for the sea works with their ability to catch fish. Because it's not about them disregarding the fish, it's about them understanding the fish, understanding that they must both have an equilibrium in order to survive, and the fish, in a way, must give up his life for their survival.
Yeah,
so that whole metaphor in the Old Man and the Sea,
and
looking at Lockhart and the way he survives with that same kind of mind frame.
Yeah, amazing similarities.
Yeah, so kind of speaks to like a rich oral culture we have here, where the narrative is not linear but circular, where everything flows in together, the current of the ocean itself.
Right.
You know. So. Yeah.
Okay, good. So let's go to our final break, and we're going to come right back. I wish to remind you that all of these shows are recorded and archived on the National Art Gallery's website, and you can go www.nagb.org.bs. Click on the education menu, scroll down to Blank Canvas, and all of the shows are archived on the website. So we're going to go to our final break, and we'll be right back.